You're listening to The Training Dummies. With Hoofit. Head. And Hotbox.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for episode 19 of The Training Dummies, recorded on November 1st, 2012. We are short one host tonight, but we have another for your ear holes. I am Taylor, my main is a guardian tank named Hoofit, and tonight is also with me. Wow, screw that up. So tonight, with me as well, is Daryl and his Resto Shaman Hend, and another guildie and original guild charter signer and day one warrior, Tim, who plays a protection and fury warrior, Tazbra. So, before we get into it, Hend, what have you been up to this week in Warcraft?
I have maxed my cooking in all of the ways. I now have a master Pandaren cook, I guess is what you call it. So that's what I've been trying to focus on this week, is get that so I can get the best feast for our attempts at raiding anyway. And other than that, I've been, you know, working on dailies now, finally, since I've hit Exalted with Tillers. I guess I started on the Klaxi and the Golden Lotus, reluctantly. I hit Revered with Klaxi today, so I'm now deciding on do I want the legs or the belt. And in addition to that, I've been doing a talent review on Hend and my Resto spec. I've come to realize that I don't use tier 1 through 3 at all. And that just doesn't seem right. So I've decided, you know, the first tier I'm going to change it to the passive talent. So at least I'm getting some use out of it. And there's my tier 2 is very situational, so I can't see myself using that much. But I plan to try out a new system with Hend it's coupling a talent and it's totemic restoration. So I think that's where if you recall your totem before its expiration, the cooldown is reduced by the amount equivalent to the lost duration. And the talent that you want to go with that is if you cancel your totems before the duration, you get the full mana back from those totems. So I'm going to try to use those in conjunction with each other, see if it helps with the mana regen as well. And this way I'll start using more of my actual talents. That's kind of where I'm at right now, what I've been doing this week, you know, working on all my reps and then, my talent review. Taylor, what have you been up to?
Well, we have an email later on that we're going to get to, which spurred me to jump on my warrior and start leveling the heck out of him. Over the weekend, I did manage to get him to level 88, but I had to stop there. If this darn new job wouldn't have come into my life, I probably would have had him to 90 by now. Job got in the way, so he stopped at 88 for now, but it was a great refresher and a revisit to the new talent system and some of the glyph changes for the warrior tanking. Also with Hoofit, I hit Revered with Shadowpan, got the new enchant recipes, and I'm one day away from hitting Revered with August Celestials for the wrist enchant recipes. And, oh geez, I'm getting real close to Exalted with Klaxi, and this is not really a spoiler alert since I'm not going to talk about what's going on, but there's a quest reward for a nice piece of gear when you get Exalted with Klaxi, so in a day or two I'll have that as well. Outside of that, that's kind of all I've been up to. A lot of time on that warrior and a little bit of time wrapping up dailies and, you know, trying to cap Valor on Hoofit with the time that I've got now. And that leads us to our surprise guest host tonight, Taz. What have you been up to?
Yo, guys. Man, thanks for having me on, yo.
Yeah, I've no, just it's been... great to...
Very good. Yeah, it's good to be here. Just been cruising around. Got my water strider from the fishing guys down there on last Thursday, I believe, which was cool. Seen that mount, thought that that would be the first one I wanted to go for. And then, not before last, got the Paladin up to 90, just because you can't have too many 90s. Haven't been running a whole heck of a lot of five-mans or anything, trying to avoid dailies, because, you know, 2 weeks goes a long way. You have to take a few days off.
Yeah.
But got the Revered with Kalaxi, so at least I can buy some things with Valor for right now, and then I'll start working on Golden Lotus, I guess. Now, outside of that, not a whole heck of a lot. Just making sure to get my daily living steals in and learn my new glyphs every day.
Nice.
Right on. Well, thanks for joining us on such short notice. I've got a little surprise clip here as well. I've mentioned it to Taylor, so he hasn't heard this yet. But listening to our show, you might think it's a very clean show. We don't swear a whole lot. But, you know, I had a real close listen last week, and I was quite surprised. So, Taylor, can you play this clip for us, please?
Oh, boy. Here we go. I have not heard this. So, all right. Here we go.
But one of our paladins in the guild, Nodos, he has, like, I kid you not, like 17 of the things.
This week, we recover from our bruised egos.
All right. Well, this might apply to us, but do you have any advice for raiders?
There's been a lot of dailies going on, if you can believe that.
I just can't get myself into the Klaxi right now.
I know what you are saying from a tanking perspective, because I haven't found a single piece of leather with dodge on it. tell me those weren't actual swear words that you're just like bleeping
there
out.
There was not a single actual swear word in there.
Oh man. That's good. I like
it. I got playing around on Saturday night. I'm like, oh, I know what I'm gonna do. Let's see how this works out. And some of them turned out really good.
Yeah, the effing leather was great.
Yep.
So you're telling me on a Saturday night, instead of going out the Saturday before Halloween, before and going doing anything, you're sitting around just beeping out random words on the podcast.
Well, no one was on the game, so what else are we going to do?
Because we were out at a party.
Yes, well, I got 3 kids. I can't really do that as much.
Okay.
And it's in Canada. They're not allowed to trick-or-treat this time of year because they'll, you know, hypothermia and all.
Oh, it was so cold last night. Oh, my goodness.
You can't tell if it's a real polar bear or people dressed up as one.
Exactly.
Did you at least listen to the Count song to get motivation before doing that?
No. I should have. All right. Well, let's get into this here. We have an email from Seth, and it is actually the basis for the whole show today. So I'm going to read that here. He says, forgive me if this goes long. Feel free to edit it down if you read it on the show. Well, we're reading on the show, and we're not editing anything down. Hey, guys, I guess I would be remiss if I did not mention how much I love the show and suck up to you guys first.
We like it.
But alas, I did not email just to tell you how wonderful your podcast is, and it is.
Thank you
very much. I need help tanking. I've played the game pretty much solo most of my career because of fear of butt fedoras and my shyness. I'm a wrath baby and thought, oh, a warrior sounds cool. I had no idea what a tank was because I came from Ultima Online. So I leveled to 80, almost doing no instances and no raiding at all. Quit the game and came back late in Cataclysm. I briefly leveled a priest and liked healing, but deleted the tune so my nephew could play on my account when I quit, but that's another story. So my problem is, I thought very much of leveling another tune to 90, but can't stomach the thought. So I want to tough it out and get good at tanking instead. That's where you fine gentlemen come in. I have no desire to play the recount horror DPS race. What I need is everything. Macros, heroic Mesopotamia guides, and hopefully tanking video guides. And please treat me like a complete noob. I'm sure I'll understand some of your knowledge, but not most. I'm a protection warrior, level 90, with blacksmith and mining. Not sure if that will help. Thanks for all you do, Seth.
All right. Well, minding helps. for sure. Now,
yes, it does.
I replied to Seth with some brief advice, and I had given him some links to the more cowbell segments that I had started on working on. You know, a little brief one and a half minute clips that kind of covered tanking and little things to look out for here and there. But there's no need to go over that here because we are going to pretty much go over all of that and more. So before we actually get into tanking, let's talk, because, you know, he's basically asking us, he's got a level 90 protection warrior. What does he do? He doesn't know. So the first thing, you've got two professions, mining and blacksmithing. Both of these work fairly well for tanking. Taz's warrior has it. My warrior has it. And, yeah, those are really good. So the first thing you're going to get from mining is it's a little bit of a health boost. Not much, but health counts. And blacksmithing is going to give you extra gem slots on your wrists and gloves where you can put gems into. Obviously the gem item level has to, you know, your item equipped has to be a high enough item level for the gem that you put in it. If you try to put something, you know, like a Pandaria level quality into a Cataclysm quality item, it won't let you do that. But you can still use the equivalent level gems for those things.
And so, on that, to make those extra sockets only costs 4 extra strong flux, so it's nothing out of pocket. It's minimal. It's like coppers.
Yep. It's basically 2 free extra gem slots. And a couple episodes back, we did talk about a list of all the professions and what they give. And really, by the end of the day, every profession gives roughly this exact same amount of advantage of any other profession. And really the only way you're going to squeeze more out of your professions is by not having a gathering profession and getting a second crafting profession that provides a bonus. But to do that, you'll have to have a second tune or a lot of money to get the mats to level that other profession. But anyway, that's a different point altogether. Let's go ahead and get into some tanking basics. So, your stats. Tim, you want to go ahead and take this one?
Well, all right. Well, obviously, your stamina is a huge deal. More health lasts longer. But mastery is your second one. That goes the long way. Fractured Sun's Radiance gems, yellow gems, those are going to be your best friend. It's 320 mastery. You want to put those in that bracer and wrist socket that you make, mastery everything up. Change your stats around for mastery. A lot of the guides say to keep your expertise and hit to the max, 7.5%, I believe, is what it's at. That's just if you're having threat issues. If you're not maintaining aggro on the things, you're going to have to raise those. I'm only on about, 2% on both of them, and I haven't been having issues with the threat at this point. So make sure you have some, but don't go with what the guides say is high. I don't think it's necessary at this point. Mastery is your number one friend. And then you want to get that parry up there. And I believe on Noxic, it says that you want your parry to be 2.5 times higher than your dodge, because it doesn't get as much diminishing returns as dodge does. So if you have something, you know, a lot of parry, a lot of dodge, go ahead and reforge that dodge into mastery. That's the one you're after, number one.
Yep.
Now, outside of that, you want a gem, you know, mastery parry probably would be your best bet. According to the gem bonuses and all that you want to look at.
Yeah.
I'm always going to say, Huff.
Oh, so when you were talking about threat and if you're losing threat or if you're trying to get stats for avoidance. So if you're having threat issues, I just wanted to go into another segue topic for threat versus aggro. These aren't exactly the same thing. If if you're maintaining threat, it means, you know, the more the damage that people are doing and the healing that people are doing are not taking those mobs off of you. If you have aggro, it just means you have attention of the mob for the moment. I want to go into taunting real quick. Taunts are a temporary way to get something's attention until you can establish threat. Just an example, you could be in there tanking and, you know, you taunt it, you hit it, and you've established threat and people are doing damage and stuff, and then you're going to have a warlock or a hunter in your group that forgets to turn off their pet's ability that taunts. Growl. Yeah, growl or
hunters.
Yeah. And what that's going to do is however far ahead you were on threat, and what this does, this gives you a nice cushion. So let's say a mob stuns you and you can't attack it and other people are still damaging it. They're gaining on you, but you've established a large enough gap of threat that being stunned or whatever they've done to you, you still basically have their attention. What other people's taunts, if another character taunts or if a player's pet taunts, that basically brings that whoever's doing the taunt, brings them up exactly to your threat level plus one basically. And let's say you're stunned or you stepped out of melee range for a second or the mob moved or whatever the chances may be, all of a sudden the pet has aggro, it has threat now over you until you can hit it again or do whatever. And just watch out for that, because if you're trying to tank your first five man and you notice you're not holding threat and things are bouncing all over the place, see if there's a hunter's pet in the group. Ask them if they have growl or if their warlock pet has a taunt, or if their pets are using high threat moves that are, you know, basically made for tanking, because those classes have pets that tank for them so that they can DPS. Just watch out for that. There's add-ons you can get to kind of look out for those things that'll whisper you or whisper someone else that someone's using their pet's using a taunt or something. But yeah, threat versus aggro. Those are a couple of they're very different mechanics, but they both kind of are used interchangeably when you hear people using them. We'll get a little bit more into threat pulling or aggroing in a little bit later. Let's go ahead and move on into positioning. I know Taz can vouch with me here that walking backwards is probably one of the number one skills of tanks.
It is, and don't try to do it while drinking. I just have to put that one out there. That's,
yeah, especially
one I will never live down.
Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at least things have gotten better over the years in the positioning of bosses, especially. I mean, back in the old vanilla raids, or just instances, man, everything was such low ceiling. I swear I've seen more monster crotch than I care to admit.
Nice.
Yeah, Yeah, those days sucked. It was like all you saw was like half polygons and... yep, the crotch, and then maybe some other stuff. It was very difficult. You couldn't zoom the camera out. You couldn't do anything.
And everything had a knockback, so I was racking up the frequent flyer miles like crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, at least now they've opened up everything so you can have a chance of see where you're going.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say the biggest thing about positioning is if you don't know, don't face them towards the group. Always turn everything away from the group. And if they happen to have a long tail, that's on the group to sidestep out of the tail. You keep the breath going away from the rest of the group.
Yep, that's kind of my rule of thumb. Always face it away, especially if you don't know. And if it is a dragon type monster, something with a, you know, that's, it's a long monster instead of a tall monster, and it's got a tail, face it. Instead of directly away from the group, face it kind of at a 90-degree angle from the group so that the group is looking at its side. Because,
yeah, at least diagonally. Diagonally.
Yeah.
So they're looking at flanks instead of butts.
Yep. You don't want things attacking you from behind. The reason why is because if a mob is behind you, you, unlike the NPC creatures of WoW, you do not get to dodge, or at least you don't get to block and parry from behind. I don't know if you can... I don't remember if you can dodge if something's behind you or not. But either way, you lose, especially as a warrior, you lose so much of your avoidance if they're behind you. So you need to probably walk backwards or turn around. Or if they are coming at you from all different angles, this is why you use something AoE, get their attention, and walk backwards to try to funnel them more in front of you so that you can see everything going on around you. If you have to get away from anything, don't run away from them so that you face your back to them. Use your strafing keys if you can so that you're running sideways, because as long as anything is 180 degrees in front of you, it's considered in front of you. Even if it's exactly to your side, it's still considered in front of you unless you turn just too much. And then you're 181 degrees, then they're behind you. But yeah,
right,
the easiest
thing
to do.
In that same breath, if you have to get away quickly and you don't, there's poop and on the ground, you understand you've got to get. Warriors are very mobile. You have intervene, you have heroic leap. You can just break out of there in a quickness, get turned back to them, reestablish your position, and then they're on their way to your front and you're good to go again.
Yep. Yeah, or you could also, if those are on cooldown, you could also target another mob if there's something else available and charge it to get away from something. Let's say you had like a group of four, and then there's a loner off to the side. You could essentially shockwave the four, and then charge the one that's all by itself to try to buy yourself a little bit of time from the larger group, but the whole point of that would be to reposition so that everything's in front of you again, hopefully. A very, very nice thing. We're still talking about basics here. Let's see.
While we're talking about positioning and just the whole tanking aspect, you have to learn to wiggle that camera around, and you will look at things from a completely different point of view than everybody else. Sometimes you have to swing your camera around to where you're looking at the front of your character so you know when you're backing up which way you're going. So you kind of have to, drive through your rearview mirrors. Remember, right is no longer right and that kind of stuff, to back around. As a tank, you have to get the cameras in weird, weird positions.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Because during all this backwards moving that you're going to be doing, you don't want to backwards move into another group, let's say, if you're in a five-man.
That's not very fun.
Off a ledge. I know a certain hunter from Vanilla that could have used some camera etiquette.
Yes, sir.
Moving on, another nice thing you're going to want as a tank is to view health bars. Health bars allow you to just at a glance, without having to retarget anything, you can see the health of all the mobs in your vicinity. Namely, we're talking about the ones that you're trying to control and tank. The reason why this is important is you will know, let's say you have a cooldown that you need to use. If almost everything's dead, there's probably not a need to use it. If there's one that's almost dead, you probably don't need to target that one and use one of your heavy hitting threat moves or a stun or waste a nice little mini cooldown even. You can
if it starts peeling off a little bit and it's 10%, it's going to die before it gets to that mage. Save your taunt, 8-second cooldown.
Right, absolutely. It's just a real easy way to assess what is going on in your situation. You see the health bars, you know what's going on. Sometimes you can even see, I use an add-on called Threat Plates, and I can see other cast bars of other mobs. I don't know if that's on the default bars or not, But either way, it's still helpful to know the health of all the mobs around you. And
yeah, and that's more than just tanks too. Health bars are, no matter what role you have, it's helpful to have health bars on. It's a quick and easy way to tell how many creatures are still left. Is there five there? Is there three there? If they're all stacked together, the health bars separate themselves, whereas the mobs all stand together in a pile. So it can be a lot easier to see that. As well, you mentioned tidy plates. You know, with tanking, it works differently than it does for a healer or DPS. But it will show the health bar as green if you do not have threat on that, and it will turn it to yellow if you're a healer and DPS, if you're starting to pull threat, and red if you have the aggro from that, where it's reversed for the tanks. So yeah, health bars is just, that's good advice all around, no matter what role you're doing.
Yeah, I'll talk about threat plates a little bit later when we get into the more advanced stuff. But yeah, so that's about it for the basics. Those are things that you want to kind of make sure you've got those things figured out, or just practice on them. And you can practice any of this stuff. You can practice your stats anytime at all. But, you know, you could practice holding threat or your positioning with groups of mobs just anywhere out in the world. Just grab a group of mobs and walk backwards and watch how they kind of funnel in front of you and reposition so they're all nice and lined up, as opposed to just, you know, all scattered all about you. So let's go ahead and get into a little bit more intermediate stuff. You are going to want to look at your talents and glyphs now, and you want to make sure that you are talented and okay. That,
unlike us,
right?
You want to get some talents.
You want to make sure your talents are tanking friendly, especially if there's one that is very specific for tanking, and you want to make sure that your glyphs support your tanking role as well. Some talents and some glyphs just are not meant for certain things. So Tim's a little bit more familiar with the new talent system since he's had his warrior at 90 longer than I have. So I'm going to let Tim cover the talents and glyphs.
Well, I think that's pretty good. Mine's at 90 and yours isn't. So I think mine's right. Been longer, 90 longer. That's pretty astute observation. It's not as detrimental as it used to be. Just always make sure when tanking as well that you are in defensive stance for the damage reductions and all that, because I have done that on many occasions. Swap specs, go in, and I'm still in, you know, arms, and I'm taking big hits going, what in the world? Make sure that you're always in defensive stance. As far as the talents go, you know, with these new trees, you know, there are some that are just for sure. Go ahead and make sure you have this one. There's a couple that are different, you know. And in the first tier, Juggernaut is the way to go. Charge every 12 seconds instead of every 20 seconds. More mobility, generate rage quicker, you know, charge from target to target when you can. That one's pretty much a gimme. Enraged regeneration, that is a must-have as far as I'm concerned. Gives you, instantly heals you for 10% of your total health, an additional 10% over 5 seconds. So whenever I'm going to use that, I always pop last stand first. That way it ups your health pool, and then it goes off that health pool for what you're getting healed from. So you're getting more health back in that time. Then the third tier, Disrupting Shout, it's just another interrupt. It's a AoE interrupt, interrupts all spell casting within 10 yards and prevents any spell in that school from being cast for 4 seconds. It's just nice to have with your pummel. With that, you can keep some people locked down, and if you have a conscientious group like we do, try to keep everything interrupted as much as you can. Next one, Shockwave, that's going to be one of your favorite spells there. You know, going pulling groups, especially, you know, multiples, you get in there with a heroic leap, whatever, and get your shockwave on. You can set your threat early and dig in. A lot of sites say for the next tier to go vigilance. I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. It's not like it was before where you just put it on one person and let it ride. Now it's you focus your protective gaze on a party or raid member, transferring 30% of damage taken to you for 12 seconds. During the duration of vigilance, your taunt has no cooldown, which, I mean, that's good. So if you have someone that keeps stealing aggro from you, you put that on it and you can just keep chain taunting. I prefer in that tier mass spell reflection. Reflects the next spell cast on you and all party and raid members within 20 yards for 5 seconds. So it just gives you a second spell reflect. So you got the one you're tanking, it's going to cast cooldowns for interrupts. You know they're on cooldown. Go ahead and spell reflect. It starts it up again. Just gives you a second. Sometimes I know there's a bunch of casters. I'll just go ahead and hit that at a chance. And you see that reflect. It feels awesome. And then the last one, go for the avatar. They're kind of all iffy, but avatar is the best of them. Transform into an unstoppable colossus for 20 seconds. Increases your damage dealt by 20% and causing your attacks to generate 30 extra rage. So, I mean, that's especially good on boss fights. Keep your rage up, do more damage, generate more threat. And it makes you immune to movement and parrying effects as well. So that's always a little added bonus.
A nice thing with that, you can, if you're getting that extra rage off of those attacks for the duration, that means you can use a lot of your other tanking cooldowns in succession as well, right?
Yes. Yes, I mean, especially if you know it's a 3-minute cooldown, so you can use it often. You know, you can get in there on those AoE pulls and just go ahead and cleave the heck out of everything. You know, pop your... I was going to write stuff down, and I didn't write that one down. Deadly Calm or something like that. That lowers the rage cost of Oak Strike and cleave. Pop that with your avatar and just cleave away, and you're getting all that extra rage. You'll be good to go, and the extra damage, which is a nice little boost as well. So yeah, that's what I do with the talents. Like I said, most of them are pretty straightforward. I just vary from the sites on spell reflection and vigilance, just because vigilance just pisses me off.
And since he hasn't been playing as long as we have, he may prefer it. Again, a lot of these are flavor, so play around with them. I mean, I've been playing the druid for a long time, and on my talents even, I'm like, you know what, this is what sites are recommending, but I want to try the other stuff out just to see if I can see a difference or not. So if you don't like a certain talent, it's very minimal to unlearn it and try another one out instead.
What's that, Tome of the Clear Mind or whatever that you use to clear it and get a new one?
And if you have a vendor mount, or if someone has a vendor mount, you can buy them off of any vendor. Well, not any vendor mount, but I think the Mammoth has it.
Or you can just go to the description vendor, and you can buy them there.
All right.
Jeeves has it as well.
Oh, Jeeves?
Jeeves sells it as well.
Yeah, keep a stack of them. So if you want to try different glyphs, different talents, just keep some on you. They're not costly. Just screw around and figure out what you want.
Yep. So now that we've gone over some basic talents and glyphs to go on with it, let's talk about what you're going to be doing when you get your first dungeon. You're going to be pulling a lot of trash mobs before you get to a boss. So there's basically several types of pulls that are common between any dungeon. So rather than giving you an exact dungeon guide, which we could still do. I mean, we could still do a guide and say, this is how this works, this is how this works. But this is something that you will be able to apply to any dungeon, pretty much in the whole game that I can think of. So there's basically, you'll probably have 5 different types of ways that you'll approach pulling trash mobs. The first is the absolute easiest, and usually this is also the least amount of damage incoming for a tank, and this is when you have just nothing but an all melee group. And the reason why is because tanks generally have lots and lots of armor and avoidance, and also ways to either reduce or absorb damage. This usually makes it the most straightforward, easy to do pull in the entire game. And there's lots of pulls like this in the game where there's a couple of just two or three, or sometimes even four or more, just dudes that are trying to punch you. And again, round them up, try to back them up a little bit so that they're all in front of you. Make sure nobody's trying to, you know, with the exception of the occasional rogue type melee mob, once you get them in front of you, you pretty much just keep them in front of you. Yeah, you're going to have an occasional rogue type mob that'll do that little vanish thing and they go behind you. I forget what it's called. Shadow step or
Shadow
something?
Shadow step, I think? Yeah.
Yeah. And then you'll have to reposition so that not only is that one in front of you, but that the previous ones are also still in front of you. If you have a whole group of rogue type mobs, then it gets a little tricky because each one likes to take their own turn jumping behind you and you got to keep repositioning. I'm sure other melee DPS in your group hate it, but if you died, they wouldn't like that too much either. So yeah, keep them in front of you. Next type of group you're going to have is melee with a healer in it. And basically, the easiest way to do this, the healer isn't an immediate threat at first, because everybody's at full health and the healer's just sitting there also at full health. So what you'll probably want to do is get threat on the melee and then bring those melee mobs to the healer and then kill the healer first. Even though you went to the melee first, you just want to make sure that you bring the melee to the healer to keep them all grouped up together and all in front of you. But then you kill that healer, because as things are dying, if you don't kill the healer first, they might start healing up other mobs. And healers also do spell damage as well. They don't just stand there and heal, so they can still do damage. Third type, chime in anytime if I leave something out.
Well, on the melee healer one, what I usually do, I have glyphed my heroic throw with gag order, so it silences. So I'll like heroic leap into the melee, land heroic throw said healer, and get it coming towards me, while I take the other ones towards it, and then shockwave once I have all three in the line, and then establish my threat that way.
Yep, that's also a very good method. And for the feral druids out there, you can, if you're glyphed for fairy fire, that'll also work, the same method. Paladins have it pretty easy with their shield, because they can just target the caster off to the side and, you know, AoE the melee mobs. Death Knights can just grip the healer over. So the next group you're going to have is going to be, let's say we've got melee and a ranged DPS. Now the ranged DPS, it could be a caster, like a mage or a warlock type caster that you could interrupt just like you could with the healer. But sometimes it'll be a hunter type mob, which you try to interrupt it, silence it, it doesn't do anything to it. It'll still just keep on shooting arrows at you from a distance. This is definitely a time where, if you're not a Death Knight, you're going to have to practice bringing the melee straight up to the ranged mob. Just the ranged mobs are such a wild card. You want to make sure that you get them out. You don't want to leave them off by themselves, especially if they can't be crowd controlled, because if you're not hitting them, they're probably going to start targeting your healer, because your healer will be generating threat on them unless your DPS is attacking them. So the best practice here is to just make sure that you always bring the melee mobs to the ranged mobs. And I'm just going to blanket cover that and say, you know, whatever your situation, you know, maybe your heroic throw or your fairy fire is on cooldown, so just practice always bringing the melee to the caster. And if you have your silence or your interrupt available, then that just makes that whole process a lot easier.
And in that same breath, remember what we said, what Hoof had said earlier. As you move them, back up towards said caster. Don't turn and run towards them unless you have a charge ready.
Right. Or strafe sideways over to them so that you can continue to dodge and parry and block. All right. Now, the last of the combo pulls you're going to have is a melee plus a ranged DPS plus a healer. And this can be an odd split. The one that comes to mind on this type of split is, let me think here, the underwater dungeon in Cataclysm.
Throne of the Tides.
Yes, thank you. Man, as soon as an expansion comes out, it's like my brain dumps all the information from the previous one because I don't need it anymore.
There's only room. It's just...
Oh, man. Oh, that was not cool at all.
That was awesome. I appreciate it.
Okay, so in Throne of the Tides, for example, there is a group that has... about halfway into the instance, there's a big circle, a room with the big old plants in the middle, and it's circular shaped. And in front of it, you've got five mobs. Most of the time, you've got three melee in the middle. You've got a healer on one side and a ranged caster on the other side. And sometimes it can be a little bit random where you've only got two melee and then you've got two healers, or two melee and two casters and a healer, but there's always five mobs there, and it's one of these split type setups. Now, again, if you've got crowd control, great, but I'm mostly going with this guide as what you can do as a tank without anything. So, yes, if you've got crowd control and you need it, go ahead and, of course, use it. You always, if you're going to do that, always crowd control the mobs on the extreme sides, either to the far right or to the far left. That way you don't crowd control something in the middle, which is probably going to get broken anyway, because it'll be within range of your, you know, thunderclap and shockwave and stuff like that. So basically on the melee plus ranged plus healer pull, you as the tank are going to use your interrupt or silence or death grip, the whatever tool that you have, on the most extreme caster or ranged DPS so that it comes to you, because now that you've aggroed it, it's going to come to you, and it's not going to stand there and cast because you've used a silencing ability. Well, I guess you would use what Tim said first. You're going to go in and establish it on the group, then you're going to use your interrupt on the far mob, so that you're only having to worry about getting aggro on one mob instead of the four mobs that you didn't attack right away. This is, again, how you're going to bring them all together so that you can hold them all in front of you and keep them in a nice tight group so that you can methodically kill them. And as far as kill orders go, you pretty much want to kill the healers first, then you want to kill the ranged DPS, then you want to kill the melee. And again, it could vary. You just need to pay attention to how much incoming damage you're taking. If you're not taking any damage and you're spell reflecting and all that stuff, you're probably good to go.
Another thing with, like, hunter-type mobs, you have to be leery of their disengage as well. The last three instances came out in Kata, the last of the three. I'm drawing a blank. Can't think of which one that is. When you come down the ramp and there's those big groups and there's those stupid hunter guys in there, that just usually there's two or three of them just disengaged all over the place.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
you know, there's a couple of the poles that you could actually control which direction you wanted them to go, make them go disengage into a wall instead of towards another mob group. And that just comes with running and repetition and knowing what mobs are going to do what, and then that's when positioning also comes into play, so you can still keep them corralled and cornered and don't let them get free to where you have to move everybody back to them again.
Our Twilight.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's the one.
I gotta be in the show for something. I don't have a tank.
Well, you could talk about when we don't position right and we do turn our backs and make your job difficult.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, and lastly, there's basically one last type of pull that you're gonna do, and this is a very, very situational. It's not going to happen very often. But this is called the line of sight pull. Now, you haven't, according to your email, you haven't tanked in Mists yet. But I'm going to use a dungeon in Mists as an example, and I'll also use a dungeon in Cataclysm as an example, since you probably have at least seen that. And I'm assuming you've at least done DPS in Mists, so you might have seen both of these examples. But basically, a line of sight pull means you're going to get attention on one of the mobs of a group. So you can taunt if you want. You can get body aggro if you want. And by body aggro means you get close enough to where they notice you and then they come running after you. Or you can use a ranged attack if you've got one. You know, heroic throw, fairy fire, those type of things.
You can let what you're have his totems down.
Right.
That'll help you out.
Oh, man.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about.
So once you've established that you've got their attention, this is where line of sight comes into play. If there is an object that cannot be cast through, ran through, cast over, walked over, that type of thing, so a wall, basically, or a large column or post, you can get behind it, and instead of trying to corral up all the mobs that in that group, because they can't reach you, even if it's all casters, if they can't reach you because you're behind something that can't be cast through or gotten to, they will run to you and round themselves up for you, essentially. So it makes your job a lot easier. Now, you're going to use this tactic if there's a lot of casters and they're spaced out, or you know, that type of situation where they're not mob types that group up well easily. Now, there's a caveat to this. We talked in the very beginning that threat and aggro is not the same. So if you have aggro, if you've taunted one mob of the group, so you've and even on the mob you taunted, it's not even going to matter. Or you get body aggro, and you go run behind this pillar or this wall, and let's say the healer in your group says, okay, he just pulled a whole bunch of people, I better put a hot on him, a heal over time on him, because I know he's going to be taking damage here pretty soon. And let's say that healer is not behind that wall or column, and he's got direct line of sight, direct visibility to these mobs. Since you just engaged in combat with those mobs, and then the healer healed you, and you haven't done any damage to these mobs, the healing is considered more threat than what you have done so far, and then the mobs will immediately turn to the healer and stomp his face. So what you want to do is, if you're going to do a line of sight pull, you want to make sure your group knows you're going to do a line of sight pull. So just tell them, you know, I'm line of sight pulling, or make sure that your healer is where you're standing, or, you know, in close proximity and not within view of the mob, so that if he does happen to heal you, they still have to go through you first, you know, pathing wise. You're in between the healer and the mobs. Make sure that they have to go through you first before they can reach the healer. Otherwise, if the group doesn't know you're doing this type of pull, especially let's say you're in a pug, the DPS are just going to let loose, the healer is going to start healing, and you're going to be hiding behind a wall somewhere, and they're going to be like, what the heck, tank? What are you doing? So, yeah, let them know. Let them know what you're doing. Now, if you're running in a group constantly, and this is your habit, then it's probably not a big deal. You don't have to tell them every time because they're going to expect you to do it. You know, in guild, well, a lot of us run with the same people, or, you know, the same rotation of people. So, you know, more than just a few people know that this is how I pull in dungeons, and they're used to me pulling that way. And same like when I'm on my DPS and Tim's tanking, and I know what he's going to do, and I, you know, adjust my playstyle to how he tanks. And so let's use some examples of line of sight pulling. In Cataclysm, in the Halls of Origination, the very first pull in that entire dungeon, there's a healer type mob, there's a melee mob, there's a hunter mob, and then there's a huge dude in the back that's a caster mob that's casting fire and stuff.
He's just and back to chucking meteors.
What's that?
That big dude, he's just back there chucking meteors.
Yep, his first move is just AoE meteor showers. And then right after, once he's done with that, he starts casting fireballs. But so in that hallway, there is a door, and that door has an edge to hide behind. So you could essentially you do anything to the first mob, anything you want, just to get their attention. Once you've got one's attention, they've all got your attention. And what you can do is run behind the little wall right at the entrance, and all of them will funnel right to you. And if the DPS doesn't DPS right away, and if the healer doesn't heal you right away, or if they too are also behind that wall, it'll be a perfect pull. They'll all be right in front of you. You can do everything you need. An interesting Mist of Pandaria version of this is... Stormstout Brewery. The last boss room, one of the, I guess, trash pulls, it's like the same room where just more mobs keep spawning and they kind of give you a hint at what the final boss is going to have for abilities. But one of them has 9 little caster mobs. Now, if there's a column, when you just enter the room, if you face the right, there's a column, right in the middle of the room on the far right hand side. If the whole group gets behind that column and you as the tank just aggroes one of the mobs and also get behind the column, all 9 of those, instead of being all spaced out in that, you know, 3x3 grid, or is it a 4x4 grid? Are there 12?
I can't remember if
there's 9 or 12.
4x4 would be 16 anyway.
Oh yeah, that's right. Math. Nice. This is why simple you're an math. Accountant.
Simple math.
Anyway, what'll happen is they'll all be funneled right there, all of them at once. That means everybody's AoE hits all of them at the same time, and you can, you know, I've seen that pull take ages to get all of them down, or I've seen it take seconds to kill that whole thing. So that is an example of line of sight pulling. And that kind of wraps it up for our intermediate tanking stuff. On our advanced tanking, we've got a few things here. So, this will come into play. Taz raid tanks with me, and in raid tanking, we do a lot of tank swaps. So basically, if you are graduating beyond the level of 5 mans and you're going to step into raiding, one of the first things you're going to want to know is you're going to have to share that threat with another tank. You are going to have to basically play to what this boss is going to do. And the reason why you have 2 tanks basically is the boss will do more damaging abilities than you as a single tank have cooldowns for. So what happens is when you have a damage reduction cooldown that you've used and you have to wait another minute or so to use it, basically the other tank taunts and starts establishing threat, and he takes over and uses his cooldowns. I mean, it's not always that simple, but that's the gist of it. The tank swap. This is where you're going to have to learn how to make sure that you're not taunting too soon or too late, because if you do one or the other, your cooldowns may not be ready, or the other tank may take too much damage and die, type of thing. You got anything to add on that, Taz?
Well, it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier, with the taunting and then hitting them to establish your threat instead of just the aggro. I mean, we just ran into that in the vaults on the first boss. You know, we have to keep them separated. I taunt, but before it gets to me, it's turning and going back to you because you had bleeds on it already. So I have to taunt, heroic throw, to make sure it comes over to me. So you have to establish your threat as well, not just a taunt.
Yeah, that's a very good example too. Because as a druid, I'm always keeping lacerates up on my targets. And when we were doing one of the guardian swaps in Mogoshan vaults, Taz had taunted it, and everything was going fine except it got about halfway to him and ran right back to me. And what happened was, the taunt only lasts for 4 seconds, I think, that it'll have your attention. That gives you 4 seconds to hit it with something. And if anything else happens before then, it pretty much reverts back to whatever it was before. So because I had my bleeds on it, he taunted it. His heroic throw was on cooldown. And my bleed ticks caused enough threat but before it even got to him, during that 4 seconds, that it came back to me before he could go melee it. So then we just made sure that when he taunted, he heroic throwed right after, and that was, we never had a problem since. So no, again, since another example of aggro versus threat. All right.
Yeah, and is, you know, just with the tank swaps, like you say, too soon, too late. You know, we've had many times where we've been, okay, I have 3 stacks, take them. And you hear that, you hit the taunt before looking at your own debuffs. And you needed to wait 2 more seconds before you taunted. And now he turns around, and now you're at 4 stacks, the other tank's at 3 stacks, you're screwed. You need to make sure that your debuff is gone in situations as that as well.
Yep. You're also going to hear terminology thrown around, main tanks and off tanks. It really doesn't matter, you know, there's not one role that's more important than the other. Most of the time, the person they call a main tank is the one that's geared up to take the heaviest hits and has the most survivability from the boss, and the off tank is the person with the assignment of, we're talking vanilla terminology here, but the off tank is the person that is assigned to gathering up any adds during a fight that will spawn and control them so they're not attacking the healers and the raid group and stuff like that. Nowadays, it's not always so, you know, one tank does this and one tank does that. There's often times where both tanks have to do both things. You know, maybe during a swap, you know, just to use a generic example, I can't think of anything right offhand, but let's say I'm tanking a boss and there's adds and I'm getting a debuff from the boss, and then when my stacks are getting high of this debuff, Taz will taunt and then I'll take over rounding up the adds while waiting for my debuff to wear off and while Taz is fresh on the boss. And you know, you could, there's things like that you may have to do here or there later on. Basically, what you want to do when you get to this point is just know what your strengths and weaknesses are and what your fellow tank's strengths and weaknesses are, and just try to do your best between the both of you and just do what needs to be done. So, I guess that's kind of, okay, let's get into something a little bit different. We'll get into some add-ons. You don't need them, but they do help a lot. Taz is not a heavy add-on user. I am a heavy add-on user. I said I would talk about it, and so I will. I'm going to talk about Tidy Plates and Threat Plates. Now these, we talked about your health bars, the nameplates. You want these active. The default will work. It's fine. I like a little bit more information just in case. Most of the time during raids, it really doesn't matter. Most of the time, this comes more in handy when I'm running five mans and I don't have to pay as much attention because it'll alert me if I'm even close to having to worry about it. So what Tidy Plates does is it replaces the default health bars that you see with a new health bar that it's dynamic based on your situation. Hen talked about it, what it did for DPS and healers. What it does for tanks is it's basically the exact reverse of that. So if everything's good, I have all the mob's attention, I've got all the threat, everything's under control, all the health bars are they're kind of small and out of the way, and they're green, and it, you know, I can still see the health numbers and percents and all the information on the mobs, if they're elite or not, I can see all that. But what will happen if by chance, let's say I'm targeted on one mob, but a healer's DPS is focusing on something else, and I just didn't notice it. If I'm close to losing threat, the health bar will get a little bit larger and turn yellow. And if they have pulled threat, it'll turn solid red. And so basically, that just tells me, oh, I lost a mob, and I know exactly which one it is. And all I have to do is, you know, all the ones that I'm good with, all the health bars are tiny and green and a little bit out of the way. And then the one that I need to get back under control is large, and it's easy to look at and click on. I can just click it, hit it, or taunt it, or whatever I have to do. Just makes it really easy to get it back. Another add-on I really like is Omni CC. That's short for Omni Cooldown Count. Now this is basically, it just replaces the little graphic dial. So when you, like, let's say you use a cooldown that's more than just the instant one. So let's say it's a minute long or 2 minutes or whatever. You're going to see a radial dial from the center of the button that kind of, I think it goes clockwise. So it kind of counts down. It's dark and it starts lightening up clockwise. And when it, you know, completes its rotation, your cooldown is ready again. The reason why I like Omni Cooldown Count is it replaces the radial graphic with an actual number. So I don't have to, so I know exactly, you know, I have exactly 10 seconds left when this is ready, or I have exactly, you know, I can look at it without having to watch it moving to try to estimate how much time is left. I don't have to guess. I can just know exactly when things will be ready. And if you have a bunch of abilities with more than a global cooldown like that, it's just nice because you can just look and say, okay, this one's got 10, this one's got 15, this one's got a minute and a half. So for me, it's a very quick reference, and I love it. Probably the last thing you're going to want as add-ons, and this works even in five-mans, is an add-on called Deadly Boss Mods. And, well, okay, there's other ones too. There's Big Wigs. You could basically look up any add-on that is a dungeon or raid warning add-on. We use Deadly Boss Mods in the guild, so that's what I'm talking about. This is basically what it's... In five-mans, it's just going to be very helpful, letting you know when things are happening or when a boss does something, or most of the time it'll just give you little alerts and sounds and sometimes a timer bar, but the five-mans aren't too complex. So most of the times it's just little alerts. In a raid, it can be very, very helpful because it'll give you all kinds of raid information. It will it'll give you timers when the boss ability will become available. So let's say a boss has a huge attack that does all kinds of damage, and you're not sure when he's going to do it. So with Deadly Boss Mods, you're going to see a timer that says huge attack, and it's going to count down, and when it reaches zero, then you know that at this point or any point after this point, you need to have your big damage reduction cooldowns ready. Without it, you might be guessing a little bit, and you might use a cooldown when you don't need to, and you wish you would have saved it for 10 seconds later. It gives lots of other information, especially in the case when a raid boss has multiple things to look out for. One of those things, the first boss in Mogoshan Vaults has three targets, basically. So Deadly Boss Mods will list all three targets. It'll list a very easy visual to know which one's at which level of energy gains. If this makes no sense to you, don't worry about it. It'll just give you a lot of other information that's a little bit easier to read than the default UI, and in some cases it gives you a lot more information that the default UI does not give you at all. Alright, that's about it for kind of must-have add-ons, I would say.
And then with the deadly boss mods, when it screams at you that you're a little girl, don't take it to heart.
Don't. If we do, then you need to be worried.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so, yeah, there's tons of add-ons that you could use. I want to warn you about one that I really don't like. It's called Taunt Master. If you hear people saying you should use Taunt Master, I would really highly, highly suggest not using it. If you start using Taunt Master, it's going to become a crutch, and it's going to, I don't know, it's going to make it very easy for you to lose situational awareness that you're going to gain from just doing and learning what you need to taunt and what you need to get and making your own decisions. Now, granted, yes, it can help you, especially if you've never tanked before and you don't know what, but you know, it'll just highlight a button, you click it, and it'll taunt whatever you lost aggro on. Yeah, okay, that sounds great at first, but again, it makes for very bad practices in my opinion. And I would recommend just staying away from it and learning how to establish threat and which targets you need to taunt versus which ones you may not even need to taunt. An example was Tim said earlier, you know, mobs at 10% health and you know it's going to die in one or two hits, and let's say a caster just got a couple of nukes in a row that were just ridiculous and pulled it. You don't need to taunt that because it's going to die the very next hit before it even gets close.
And put your taunt on the 8-second cooldown and get yourself stuck for a couple seconds.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would highly recommend, if anyone's ever recommended that add-on, just get rid of it, or, you know, don't use that as a crutch. It'll become a crutch eventually. Now,
yeah. I just wanted to throw in there, recount, you know, I'm not a big add-on guy like Taylor said. I just used it, DBM and recount. Recount is not just for damage. It's not just to see who's outputting the most damage. It can be very beneficial for the tank as well. You're seeing who is the highest damage. That's the person you have to watch who might pull the threat from you. You're just learning to tank. You died. Why'd I die? You can go in there and look at your death and say, okay, he cast such and such that hit me for 120,000. So now you know to look for them casting that spell. You might save your interrupt to make sure you interrupt that spell. You make sure you don't stand in his whirlwind because that's what killed you. It can be very beneficial outside of just seeing who's doing the most damage.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. I think we've mentioned that in an earlier show, the damage meters, they have so much more utility than just your EPing and seeing how much damage you do. Yeah, it's fun for it, but yeah, there's so much more you can look out for. It can also be an indicator, you know, an early warning indicator of, you know, if someone's not doing their job. You know, you can see, you know, if you're the tank and you're triple everyone else's damage and you look at what other people are doing and the only damage ability on their meter is auto attack, they're not using anything except for melee. You know, they're just right clicking and taking a leak. So yes,
did you say right clicking and taking a leak in the same sentence? That sounded
it's possible.
A little suspect.
It is possible. But yeah, you can keep a lookout for damage meter douchebags with damage meters. So, you know, don't shun it just because in your email you did say that you don't want to play the damage meter game. But it can still be a very useful tanking tool. It's also very useful to see, you know, who is interrupting. Taz said, you know, you want to save your interrupts for things that might be killing you. You can see, you know, is anybody contributing to interrupts? Are you the only one doing it? Are there five people that can interrupt in the group and nobody's doing it? You know, that type of thing. There's so much more it can report on than just damage or damage output or damage per second.
When somebody blames the tank for not holding threat, you can look in there and say, nuh-uh, you started in the purple crap, and that's what killed you.
Right. Yep. You can, yeah. Yep. It'll report that. When you look at the deaths, you could see, you know, why did somebody die? Okay, well, they took damage from the purple. So, not good.
You don't have to take all the DPSers crap all the time. You can stand up for yourself. You are not their personal meat shield. You do have feelings as well.
All right.
You got it tough enough if you're going to be a tank.
Yeah, yeah. Macros. You don't need macros, but they can sure help you a lot.
No, you need macros. You need them.
Well,
let's say you don't.
You know,
you need them. Whether you know Tim it or not, you need them.
Tim needs a macro, and he's got it. He's got the best macro in the game.
That's right. Forever pull slash trend, baby. What's up?
Awesome.
Now, yeah, macros are really a personal preference, and they are very heavily based on how you play and how you, you know, organize things on your keyboard. You know, how you use your keyboard and mouse together. I do find that of all the roles I've played, macros I used the most with healing, second most with DPS, and with tanking I've used the fewest macros. And the most macros I use with tanking are mostly like dual action buttons, so that you know, to save kind of button space. So if my hand's on my keyboard and I basically use my 1 through 6 keys as my primary buttons, that I don't have to use 7, 8, 9, 10 and the dash and the equal sign as well. Instead of having to reach over that far to press those buttons to use an action, I can just hold shift 1 through 6 to use those actions, or, you know, whatever key modifier you want. That way I basically have 12 actions on 6 keys, depending on what I need. That's not exactly how I'm set up. I'm just using that as an example of how you can basically double your access to abilities. You know, if when you start getting over to those abilities on the zero, the dash, and the equal sign, when you have to leave your, you know, if you can't stretch that far, or if hitting that key, you fat finger it half the time, and you hit the, you know, you're trying to hit zero, but you hit 9 or the dash instead because you overshoot it because you're, you know, you're watching the game and you have to move your hand to get to it. Having those shift modifiers or control modifier, having a modifier macro to double up on your at least some of your keybinds will allow you access to more abilities without having to readjust your positioning, so you don't accidentally use the wrong things. Again, it's a very personal preference. I use a combination of multiple things. I've got a gaming mouse with multiple buttons on it, which I also have keybinds to. So you basically just work with what you've got. If you've got a keyboard, you can use any type of modifier macro to double up on binds, but you can expand it further with a gaming mouse, which I guess will bring me into the hardware part of tanking. So if there is one piece of hardware that I would recommend anybody get to improve their game, regardless of what they're doing, regardless of tanking or healing or DPS, I would recommend a gaming mouse with extra buttons. All gaming mice work essentially the same way. Most have a default configuration, like, you know, the button does page up or page down on Internet Explorer, or back a link, back a page, or forward a page. They've got, you know, just some default functions assigned to them. They will come with a software that you install, and in most cases that I've found, I've used about 4 different gaming mice. All of them have a software so far that I've come across that have a picture representation of the mouse, and they'll have like a little line that points to a button. And you can click on that line and say, okay, I don't want it to be page up anymore. I want it to be F12 or F9 or whatever. You can reassign, or maybe you want it to be Control 5. Who knows? Whatever the case may be, the software lets you take away those default lame actions and put in useful actions to those buttons, which then can correspond to you. Once you've set that up on the software, you just go into the game and say, I want this button. You know, you go to, you hit escape, you go to interface or key bindings, and then, you know, you go to an action bar. Let's say not your default one with the 1 through 0 on it, but let's say your other action bars, and you can start binding those other buttons to your mouse keys. And then all you have to do is drop a spell onto those, and now you've got those spells on your mouse, basically. So, yeah, if there's one piece of gaming hardware, it's definitely a mouse. Gaming keyboards are nice, but I think in the case of WoW, anyway, a gaming mice is a huge, huge upgrade and can really expand your game. I know Hand can personally vouch for this because apparently he told me about this mouse.
I did. I told you, and then you told Rob, so really it's all for me. But yes.
Right.
I went out and tested a whole bunch and found the best one, and then let you know which it was so that you wouldn't have to do that.
That must have been how it went.
Why is this the first time I'm hearing about any of this?
Oh, man. You know what? There is a mouse over macro that I highly recommend for tanking. I totally forgot about this. Instead of, you know, you can focus targets, and this is very handy for you want to focus a caster or something that you know is crowd controlled, or maybe you just want to keep an eye on something else, or maybe you want to, maybe if you're in a raid, you want to keep an eye on the other tank. So in game you can right click somebody and select focus. There might be a default keybind for it. If you click on somebody and hit it and it'll focus them, I'm not sure. But what I did was I made a mouse over focus macro, and it's bound to one of my mouse buttons. So I don't have to target anything. I can just, if I want to focus the other tank, I just mouse over Taz. I don't have to select him or anything, and I just hit the button that's the mouse over focus, and bam, he's my focus target. Or for example, on my mage, if I see that there's a patrol coming up on their group and I know that we're going to aggro it because they're going to patrol right into us, I don't have to stop DPSing on whatever I'm attacking. I'll just mouse over that patrol, or one of them anyway, and focus it. And then while I'm attacking, I can just squeeze in a polymorph on my focus target, and I never have to leave my DPS target, and I'll be able to crowd control something that's my focus target without skipping a beat. So the mouse over focus macro is super handy, but it's also very handy for tanks when you need to know about what another target is doing. It's always handy to keep that focus handy. That pretty much wraps it up for episode 19. So all you DPS and healers out there, I hope we didn't bore you too much, or at least I hope we gave you some insight on what tanks generally do. Walk backwards a lot and stare at crotches, apparently. So please indulge us. Yeah, so I think it is about time for this now.
Yo, I guess I'm supposed to start this, huh? Some of the hen love?
Yeah.
All right, then. I reckon we'll send out the big hen love to all our people over there on the Deathwing server, on the best guild, the Horderlies, baby, and everyone that hung out with us, wiping in the vaults. Feels good. We'll get it. Stay strong.
Yes, and I want to give a shout-out to our friends over at Hearthcast. They keep giving us all kinds of love over there and probably hyping us up more than we should be hyped up, but I'll take it. Also, all of our listeners on Twitter and Facebook, you guys are great, and you know, thanks for the feedback. Thanks for the tweets and the comments and the likes on Facebook, and we love it. When you comment on our blog on the show and participate in any type of discussion and, you know, Q&A for anybody that's got questions or other comments. And yeah, if you've got your own tips, you know, if we, you know, we tried to keep the show an hour long, and we definitely went over today. And I know we missed something. So, you know, yell at us on the blog, tell us what we missed, or if you found something that you thought was super helpful, and now your life is worth living.
Right. Okay. Well, I want to send some hand love to Convert to Raid. I finally got another show trailer up and running. So I sent that over to Convert to Raid. That was on the their last show. And as well, there's a new podcast coming out called Lore Walkers. I think they were working on their episode zero. And you should be able to hear our trailer on there as well. So be sure to check them out and see what they're all about. Yeah, should be good. 5-star views this week, none again. So if you like our show, head over to iTunes and give us a review. And if you don't like our show, just keep it yourself. Thanks.
Well, I think all 10 of our listeners already gave us 5-star reviews, so
that's probably what it is.
That lake has run dry. Right. We've got no more.
That must be it. All right. That does it for episode 19 of The Training Dummies. Be sure to check out our website, thetrainingdummies.com. If you'd like to contact any of us or the show, our information is there. We also encourage you to leave comments on the episodes. You can also find us at facebook.com/thetrainingdummies. Follow us on Twitter @trainingdummies. And subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email or record an MP3 and send it to the show at thetrainingdummies.com.
So until next time, don't be a dummy.
Woo!
Let us take the beating for you.
Woo!